everyone. Welcome back to But What Will People Say? I'm your host, Disha Mazeppa, and this is a South Asian interracial relationship and lifestyle podcast. Welcome back for another episode. Hi, everybody. Welcome back. Today's episode is about coming down from fight or flight mode. So many of my guests here, as well as myself, have talked about how much time brown girls will spend in fight or flight mode in their own homes or in their lives, and then when you finally move out, trying to come down from it and what that could be like and that journey. That's what today's episode is about. And disclaimer is that, one, I am not a therapist. Gentle reminder that I always have to remind some people. And also that I'm still like going through it. This is just like sharing the experiences that some of you shared as well as my own, and working through it sometimes basically while I'm recording. And it's not perfect. It's probably incomplete, but it is authentic. So I hope you gain something from it, or at least find something relatable in it. So without further ado, here we go. Alrighty, so let's figure this out. There's obviously fight or flight mode, and then there's also freeze and fawn, which are like the expanded version of this when you talk about what triggers, like the trigger that causes you to be in this mode. And basically when we talk about, I'm going to just use fight or flight for the sake of like being succinct. When you talk about being in fight or flight mode, it's a survival mode, and it's something your nervous system goes into when you are triggered by something where you feel unsafe and you need to figure out very quickly what to do. Are you going to fight, which is exactly that head-on confrontation? Are you going to flight, which is run away to save yourself? There's fawn, which is essentially like people-pleasing, where you're just trying to appease the person, give them what they want, say the right thing to avoid an altercation. And then there's freeze, which is blocking the person out or the thing out, and essentially just like ignoring it and carrying on, and again in an attempt to keep yourself safe. So at its root cause, when you are in fight or flight mode, you're in survival mode because you don't feel safe. And it doesn't have to mean like physically. I mean, obviously it can, but it can be emotionally, verbally. It could just be like any time you can't feel a sense of calm and just like you're okay. And I think brown girls, and most of this I will say is going to come from my experience, so I'm sorry if you can't relate, but brown girls, I think, take the brunt of this experience because everything in terms of our family's expectations falls on us. Whereas when it comes to the men, it's just parents throwing their hands in the air being like, oh, there's nothing I can say or do. He's a man. He's going to do what he's going to do. I can't control him. But then with women, it's I can control her. I will control her. I'm going to project all of this on her, and I will make this person bear all the burdens that we as parents bore, and now we're passing it on as if that is the reasonable thing to do in this situation. We're not going to get into that. And a lot of this will stem from parents who often had a lot of their own mental health and trauma and other things that they never dealt with. And so compounded over multiple generations. And then you take this generation who, especially if you're an immigrant and you live in a different country than somewhere in South Asia, everything is projected on you. And then when you go out into the world you live in, say New Jersey, and other people are not having this projected on them, you have this dual identity thing going, which can already be a form of stress because you don't know who you're supposed to be all the time. You're constantly code switching, and that can be stressful. But most of the fight or flight, at least for me, stemmed from home, from parents who felt like I was not the correct form of the person they wanted me to be, whether I wasn't cultured enough, I wasn't behaving correctly, I wasn't saying the right thing, doing the right thing, whatever. I could wake up, the sun could be out, and if there was a cloud in the sky, my parents would somehow find a way to make it my fault that it wasn't a perfect day. If I got sick, it was my fault. It was me ruining their day. If I, you know, literally made myself something to eat for lunch and the pot wasn't cleaned exactly the way they wanted it to be cleaned, I would get yelled at for that too. Even if I was just sitting on the couch reading a book, if I had my foot propped up on the table or just sitting not perfectly on the couch the way they thought was correct, I would get yelled at. Now try taking that for, I was 24 when I fully moved out besides college. So 20 years of that, constant fight or flight mode. The only time where I could not feel on edge was essentially when I went to sleep. And if I was in my room with the door closed and I knew no one could see me. And luckily I had a bedroom where the way my bedroom was set up, even if you tilted the door open, you would have to walk fully into the room to see into the room because there was like a small, I guess, hallway. It's not really a hallway. It was like 3 feet, but you couldn't just look into the room. You had to open the door. And so it gave me enough warning that if somebody opened my door, which by the way, wasn't allowed to have a lock on, I would have time to like fix myself so that if my mom or dad came in, it would be okay and I wouldn't get yelled at. So there was a lot of time just spent walking on eggshells, being worried. And then my ultimate solution was at 16, I got a job and I would just work all the time. I would work every holiday, every weekend, every time we didn't have school. So I was either at school, I was at sports practice, or I was at work. And so I would only come home essentially to sleep. And if I was studying or doing homework, I would just walk to the library. So I basically was a miniature nomad in my own life. And so when I finally left that and I moved out, it was like taking my first deep breath where I could just... And even then, it's not like overnight that disappeared. For so long, the smallest things would set me off. And here's the thing. When I was in that situation, when I was in high school, middle school, I was an angry, bitter, mean teenager. And I spent a lot of time like that because I spent so much time in survival mode that I never could just, I didn't even know who I was because the only person I was this person like on the verge of having a mental breakdown all the time. And like, it was normalized. That was my baseline. That was my status quo. There was nothing below that because I was never allowed to not be like that. And so it made me, one, not a great friend, not the nicest person to be around, and someone whose reactions to things were awful. Like, the first thing you will probably know is how difficult emotional regulation is when you are in a state of fight or flight. When you are constantly in panic mode, having reasonable reactions to minor triggers can't be expected. And I remember, for me, my solution to getting out of this situation was get a job, save up enough money to leave. And so this is back when minimum wage in New Jersey was $6.25, okay? And I was working at McDonald's, and I remember distinctly, like, working, saving up every penny, never spending anything because I was like, I'm going to go to college. And when I go, I need to have money so I can live and pay for things. And one day someone had gotten into my bag at work and they stole $200 in cash out of my bag. So what was happening back then was I had parents who micromanaged my bank account. Every penny I spent, every transaction I made was getting questioned and interrogated. So what I would do was every now and then I would take a paycheck and I would cash it. And that way there was no trace. Like, you couldn't trace where that money was going. That money never hit my bank account. It just went straight into my pocket so that I could have a little bit of spending money every now and then to, like, I don't know, buy myself an ice cream. And I remember the one day I was in the car and I realized someone had broken into my bag and stolen that $200, which when you were working for $6.25 an hour was a lot of money at the time. It was many, many hours of work. And I lost my shit. I was livid. I was angry. I was screaming, crying. I went to work. I yelled at my boss. And looking back, $200 is not a big deal. And you know what? I'd rather get robbed when I'm not there than robbed to my face, you know? But back then, that was earth-shattering for me. And my reaction was absolutely over the top because it wasn't just $200. It was money that I had worked for in an effort to get out of the situation I was in. And that's just an example. Obviously, all of you probably have your own situations where reactions weren't reasonable and that emotional regulation probably wasn't something you had. You may have been, just been upset all the time or, you know, minor things setting you off. So this was just my example. And even the day I finally left, it took years to come down from this situation, from spending over a decade, probably two decades, in fight or flight mode. And so the first thing I'm going to say, if you are working on this journey, is to give yourself grace. Don't expect yourself to be perfect and don't be so hard on yourself. As someone who is hyper independent and really is extremely hard on herself, this is still something I'm learning, but I'm a lot better at now. Because you're going to have good days, you're going to have bad days. You might take three steps forward and five steps back sometimes, and that's okay. You got to take it one day at a time. And depending on where you are in this journey and how much of it you dealt with, everyone is going to have a different path and a reaction and amount of time it's going to take to, like, heal from all of that. So definitely give yourself grace. This also made me someone who took everything personally because you're in survival mode. And, you know, everything was about people doing this to me, because what happens is you become hyper-independent because you don't feel safe and you don't have anyone that you feel safe with, that you have, like, a safe attachment to, for lack of a better phrase. I'm someone who doesn't ask for help, who doesn't feel like she can count on anybody, because when you're in survival mode, like, you don't have the luxury of trusting your stability to someone else. And then you become someone who is always finding a way to prove yourself right in that statement because, hey, I worked myself up to ask for help, to ask someone for something, and they let me down. They didn't show up. They said they couldn't do it. They did it wrong. Every single disappointment becomes like a personal attack, but also a personal validation that, hey, you can't count on anybody. You can't rely on anyone. And so now, not only are you super anxious and stressed out all the time and your cortisol levels are through the roof, but you also now are this hyper-independent person who struggles to allow yourself to be taken care of by somebody else or allow someone else into your space and create a safe person in your life. And for a lot of people, probably listening to this show a little bit, that first safe person might be your spouse. And even then, there's a little part of you that's like, I can't guarantee if this is going to work out. I still have to have my own back. You might let up a little bit, but that voice in the back of your head that's always like, but don't get too comfortable because they could leave or something could happen or whatever, where this it's the rug is going to get pulled out from under you. So it makes us grow up into fairly dysfunctional human beings, but that do not come across as dysfunctional to other people. Remember that. The rest of the world sees us all as like, you're so strong, you're so adaptable, you're so flexible, you're so good at problem solving. We can count on you for anything. It's like, yeah, dude, the only person I've ever counted on in my life is myself, and I had no choice but to figure it out. I had no choice but to be the strongest person in my life who I could always count on. Duh, that's like my baseline. And I'm tired, truly. Whew, I am 31. I'm so tired. I'm done. And this is where the healing process sort of begins. When you finally move out and you finally leave or get yourself in a safe space that maybe is just your own and no one can touch it and you can make it exactly the way you want, that could be the first time you take a deep breath. And even then, some of you might move out and do the thing I did where I just moved in with my boyfriend, who is now my husband, and just didn't tell my parents, which was also stressful because I always had to mitigate. What if they just stop by without announcing themselves? What if they come and they see his toothbrush or they realize he's living here? And that maybe wasn't my brightest life decision, but I also wasn't going to put my life on hold to appease them anymore. Once I left my house and I told them about my husband or my boyfriend at the time, there was just like me living my life. And I was like, I'm out of this house. I'm going to do whatever I want. Nothing you say or do is going to change that. I don't care if you never talk to me again. I don't care if you never interact with me again. I don't care if you go around telling everybody that I'm a useless piece of shit. Doesn't matter, because I'm out and I will never, ever come back. And I didn't. I remember the day I left, I saw it on my mom's face. She saw it. She was like, and I heard her. I heard her talking to my dad. She's like, she's never going to come back. She's leaving and this is it. She's never going to sleep in this house again. And she was right. Okay. And don't get me wrong, since then I have spent a night or two there for various reasons and things. But like, I have never gone back home to live there. And I made it abundantly clear to them. I was like, the day I leave is the day you might never see me again. So figure it out. Because I spent my whole life in fight mode. I don't like confrontation, but my middle name is confrontation. I am not interested in being spoken to with any level of disrespect. I am not interested in people coming for me when they don't know anything about me. I'm like, trust me, I am not afraid to get into a fight with someone. And I do not think that anything about me when I talk about this stuff is aspirational. This is not the goal. This is the most toxic, worst parts of who I am. And I've worked really hard to change that. But sometimes it still comes out. Whatever. I give myself grace on that front. Because if for you to bring that side out in me today at the age of 31, you must really be a giant pain. You must be really looking for it. Because I've done a lot to try to bring myself down from fight or flight mode. So let's talk about those things. Let's talk about the things that have worked for some of my guests and for myself on how to come down from fight or flight mode. Here we go. Obviously, there's therapy. Duh. We should all check ourselves in at some point. And also medication. I'm not someone who has personally ever been on medication, but I know for a lot of people, it has helped. If your baseline is fight or flight mode, you might need a little help to find what a true baseline of emotional regulation should look like, because you might not have seen it in a long time. And if that's a route that is open to you and that your doctor or your therapist thinks is something to consider, you should at least think about it. And, you know, those choices are yours to make. And I don't think there should be any shame in your game, no matter which route you take. I think another big part of this is the partner you choose. I think your partner plays such a big role in your essentially recovery, and if they're not supportive and they can't be the safe person for you and allow you to feel safe, you're gonna have a real hard time coming. You might never come down, because remember, you go from living with maybe your parents who left you in fight or flight mode, and now you're with someone who isn't giving you the grace or the space to bring yourself down from that state. Could be a real problem, because now they live there with you too. And it'll come up in the smallest ways. But before I get sidetracked, I think you should choose someone who is here to support that journey and finally be the person that you can count on, that can be there for you and show up for you. Even if it's one person, I think that makes a big difference, because even now in my life, yes, I have found family. I have friends that feel like family and I can count on them. I have people that would drop everything at any notice to show up for me. But there is nobody I trust more and can count on with more comfort in myself than my husband. So I think whoever that person is in your life, be very conscious of your decision to be with them. And that doesn't mean they can't be a source of stress for you. Trust me, being married will lead to stress sometimes, and they're going to have rough days and you're going to have to be there for them too. It's a two-way street. But just in this very like specific thing that you might be coming down from, I think your partner makes a big, big difference in that. One thing that really worked for me, and maybe it's also the fact that I really like doing this, is massages. So this actually happened by accident. I had hurt my shoulder, and because I'm an occupational therapist, I sort of know how to fix my own orthopedic problems. So instead of going to PT, I was like, I already know the exercises I have to do. I just need someone to work out my shoulder. I went to, I think, 6 or 8 weeks of massages, of 1 hour massages, and my sports massage therapist, I had him work out my shoulder, but it was an hour long massage. So I had him also just give me like a very relaxing massage along with it. So it was like 30 minutes on my shoulder, 30 minutes of just like, you know, calm, relaxing massage things. And I did it for 6 weeks straight. And then I slowly phased it out. I think I went every 2 weeks, and then I went once a month, and then I kind of phased it out once my shoulder felt better. But in that, I will say I noticed a significant improvement in like my emotional state, my stress levels, my sense of self-regulation getting improved. And so if that is something that is an option for you, I know massages are expensive, but I will say even now maintaining just like a once a month massage, which I know we market as a treat yourself type of thing, but I think this is really a form of self-care if you are trying to come down from being in a constant state of stress. I personally found it was really helpful, so that's just my 2 cents on that. Other things that worked for me was meditation. When I first left home, I went into it to very intentionally change my life. I was like, I had a picture in my mind of what I wanted my life to look like and the things I wanted to incorporate. So it was, one, eating healthier. My parents don't eat well. That's the bottom line. So it was being able to cook for myself, eating well, exercising, and incorporating meditation. And this in the beginning was priority number one. Besides like having a job and paying bills, this was what my life was built around. It was taking care of myself as much as possible. And meditation can take so many forms. I've tried everything. I've had the Headspace app. I don't know what the other one is, the blue logo. I've had that app. I've taken meditation like studio courses where you go somewhere and you meditate in this like vibey room and they play music and stuff. All different types. And I think having done that, I did it every day. I even had little mini meditations where I would do breathing exercises. Anytime in the day where I felt stressed out or anxious, I would do alternate nostril breathing, and I would also do the 10 deep breaths where if I felt overwhelmed, I would walk away, I would force myself to count and take 10 deep breaths, and if I was still upset at the end of that, I could go back in and deal with that problem. Or was I just feeling like I was overreacting, or maybe this wasn't the best reaction to the situation? And in the beginning, when I tell you I was meditating every day, sometimes twice a day, I was. And it helped tremendously. It's hard. It's kind of annoying to do sometimes, but I made the time for it, and it really, really helped. And your meditation journey will probably change as you go. For me now, meditation is just doing something with a single-minded focus. So it will be something as simple as watercoloring and just having some background music on, or even if I'm listening to an audiobook and doing some arts and crafts, it's anything that keeps my brain from wandering and lets me have a singular focus. So even if that focus is my arts and crafts, I'm not doing 50 things, I'm not talking to anybody, I'm not distracted, I'm just listening to the words of my audiobook and coloring in my pictures or watercoloring or whatever. So it can change, find the meditation that works for you. It can also be working out. Sometimes all it is me going to the gym and not listening to anything. No music, no podcasts, just me and my workout and my thoughts, and trying to come to a point where I am okay with the voices in my head. It's not perfect. Trust me, I am a daydreamer. I am a talker. I talk to myself all day long. So this can be difficult, but it is doable. And I think it made a huge difference in helping me bring down my like chronically high stress levels. Expecting flinches. So flinches are things that will trigger you all of a sudden, and it'll be really small things. And just giving yourself the grace that, like, it's okay. It's fine. You're allowed to feel like you were caught off guard by, like, the most minor things. I remember in the beginning, when I first started living with my husband, I would be at home, sitting on the couch, reading a book. And if I heard the door unlock, so Michael would come home from work, he'd be unlocking the door, he's coming in, and I would immediately jump off the couch. I would immediately have to feel like I have to be productive, like, oh, I should be cooking something, I should be washing a dish, I should be cleaning, I should be organizing. And I remember one time just distinctly realizing, like, I don't even think it was me that pointed it out, I think it was Michael who was like, oh, like, you are you okay, like, or, oh, did I scare you? It was something like that. And I was like, did you scare me? And then I kind of was able to take a step back and realize, like, oh, every time you come home, it triggers that feeling of my parents coming home, and that whatever little time of peace I had when I was home alone, I would immediately have to disrupt that because my parents were home. And it's like, if I'm in the living room, I'm going to get yelled at. Or if I'm not cleaning or I'm not being productive, I'm going to get in trouble. That's what was happening every time I heard the keys in the door turning. And it's, again, it's such a small thing. And realizing like these things will happen and you're just going to have to give yourself grace. And eventually it got to a point where I remember I was sitting on the couch reading my book and Michael was doing whatever he was doing on the couch and realizing like, oh, this is fine. I don't have to do anything right now. Everything is okay. And that feeling is such a distinct feeling, realizing I could just sit here and read my book and he's just doing what he's doing and he's not sitting here thinking anything of me. Because the other thing is the consciousness of how much you're projecting of, oh, does he think I'm being unproductive? Does he not love me because I'm being lazy? Does he think I don't work hard enough? And it's like, He does not think any of those things. I think that because that's what my parents thought. But now I'm projecting it on him. And that was a lot of work. It was a lot of work. It takes time. So give yourself all the grace and expect those little flinches and triggers because they will happen. And create your safe space. So that was, again, it's creating the home and the routine and filling it with things that bring you joy, that bring you a sense of peace, that make a home feel like the place you want to be. And it doesn't even have to be your whole home. It could be a room, you know, and you will eventually hit a point where you can take a step back at this life you've made and be like, I'm okay. That sense of I'm okay is a journey and it takes a while to get there. And the other thing you have to remember is like being in this constant state will lead to burnout. You're probably going to, I'm going to say move out because for most people, moving out is the first time they feel like they can take a deep breath. But remember, if you've been in this mode for multiple years, when you finally move out and take a deep breath, you're probably going to hit a giant burnout wall where you're just tired. And that's okay. You're allowed to be there. And because remember, like, fight or flight is not sustainable. This is not supposed to be a chronic state. This is supposed to be reserved for once in a while. You know, when you're a caveman walking around and a tiger jumps out of the jungle at you. That is what fight or flight is saved for. But if you live like a tiger is about to jump out at you all the time, and that becomes your baseline, like, imagine just the neural fatigue, the adrenal fatigue, you know, coming from a healthcare perspective, the cortisol levels destroying your body, because you want stress, but there is such a thing as too much stress, and then you end up getting sick. And that is why when I moved out, my health was such a big factor. I was setting myself up for success in that I knew this was going to be hard, but I was going to do my best to mitigate a little bit in the sense that I was taking care of myself and eating right and working out and meditating and trying to do all of that. But that also meant for a long time, I wasn't doing a lot of other things. I was only doing as much as I could, which was working, paying bills, and staying home. I don't think I really went out or did much other than when Michael would make me go do things or make plans because I just couldn't handle it because I was burnt out. And I was burnt out also from my job. So rough few years, guys. Things like burnout signs can be leading to feeling lethargic, being unmotivated. You can't fully disconnect or shut off your brain. So you are constantly in a form of stress. It's just chronic. And I think for me, it was realizing the silence and the calm was okay. Because I would always think like, what's wrong? Wait, like always looking for what was wrong and always looking for what do I have to like prepare for? And then realizing you don't have to prepare for anything. You're fine. It's okay. And that was, yeah, it's a process. I know I keep saying that. I don't know if that's even helpful to keep saying, but I think I need that constant reminder. And do the things that bring you joy. I think that was where, if you have followed me on social media, you've probably seen all of these phases I've gone through. Whether that's the watercolor phase, which is pretty standard for me, the food and the baking, the cooking, the starting this business, the starting the podcast, starting whatever. I'm constantly up to something because it's what brings me joy, but also because I struggle to sit still and I can't just do nothing. And it took probably 4 or 5 years to get to a point where I could do nothing. And even now, I have to constantly tell myself, like, It's okay to not be productive all the time. It's okay to just do something for fun. It's okay to do something just because it brings you joy. And that's it. It doesn't have to be monetized. It doesn't have to be turned into a brand. It doesn't have to turn into anything. It can just be this thing you do for fun. And it doesn't have to be something you share. I do lots of little things that I don't share online. And I recently just deleted my Instagram app. So I'm sorry if you've tried to reach out. I haven't really been online at all. And it has been great. Because the other thing people do when their brain is constantly stressed out is look for that quick dopamine hit that comes with scrolling. The doom scrolling, the easiest thing you can cut out is the doom scrolling. Because it's just tiny little hits of dopamine every time you swipe up to the next video or the next post. And it's making it worse. I promise you, it's making it worse. So if you're working your way out of fight or flight mode, I would definitely recommend cutting out the social media for a month or two and just letting your brain settle, because that's going to be a huge stimulus that's taken away along with, you know, everything else that's being changed as you move away from being in this mode. And then the last thing, someone left a question about fight or flight mode, and their question was, how do you not feel bitter or like you're set up for failure because of all of this? And I don't have a great answer for this because I'm still working my way out of it. It's been 7 years since I moved out. I was the person, as you heard in the beginning of this episode, I was angry and bitter at the world. And, you know, I think it almost became worse for a while when I realized the reason I'm so independent and such a figure it out kind of kid and so described as strong is because, and the reason when other people do things and they don't do it perfectly, when they mess things up or they cut a corner or they give up really quickly, realizing it's because they didn't have to grow up like I did. And it made me really resentful when I looked at people who were my age, who were immature or just going through life and winging it. You know, I was the kid who went to school, always got straight A's, 4.0 GPA, like the whole thing, got a job, did the thing that has never, you know, not paid a bill or never missed a core payment or whatever, all those responsible adult things. And realizing there are people who are just like doing life and winging it and making so many what I looked at as were mistakes, it made me really resentful when I realized it's like, oh, because no one was tearing you apart as a person for making minor errors or even big errors. Like, you were allowed to just be immature because you were allowed to have a childhood. Like, oh, ask me how bitter and resentful that made me. When people are like, oh, it'll just feel like you're a kid again. I'm like, can't relate. Don't know what that means. Shut the fuck up. So I don't know if I'm the best person to ask this question to. But I will say, as I've gotten older, what has made it a lot easier to not be bitter and resentful and like I'm set up for failure is when I step back and I look at my life now. And one, I talk to myself like I like myself and that I am my own friend. But also looking at the life I have created now, you know, the relationship I have, the way my day-to-day looks, the people I'm surrounded by. And I look at it and I think, you know what? I did it. I came out on the other side. And remembering that the things I went through and pulled myself out of that led me to end up as this somewhat broken person that I felt like at times, I'm not that person anymore. And that's not my life anymore. That even if, you know, shit hit the fan tomorrow, that one, I have the ability to figure it out. But two, that doesn't mean that I will end up back in that hole I crawled out from. You know what I mean? And because I'm such a prepper in my head, it has also led me to creating pretty strong boundaries, which I'm not saying they aren't overstepped at times, they are, but it makes it easier for me to be firmer about them. I don't feel bad about it because I know how hard I worked to build the life I have now that looks nothing at all like the life I had for so long. And that has made me a lot less angry and bitter because I just constantly remind myself that, like, you're okay and look how far you've come. And if you've come this far, look how much farther you will still be able to go. And I think that's what gives me the hope. Again, doesn't mean I'm not sometimes a little bitter and resentful. Trust me, sometimes I look at my family and the life that I used to live, and I'm literally want to be like, you know what? Fuck you. Like, you fucked everything up. And it's complicated because, like, oh, like, how is being this angry benefiting me? It's not. Trust me, I don't spend every day thinking this. I'm not as angry as I used to be, but I used to be angry all the time. And I'm just slowly stepping away from it because I'm like, this is hurting me more than it's hurting them. Being angry at them is doing nothing. Let me tell you, my parents don't think they did anything wrong. They put a roof over my head and they put food on the table. They were exceptional parents. That's it. That was their bar, and that's fine. And I think in my head, it's like remembering they're not going to change and just like letting it be. It's like, I can understand you tried your best. Unfortunately, your best was still not great, but I'm going to choose myself every day. I'm going to live my life the way I choose to live it. And I really don't care what you or anyone else thinks about it. I don't care if I'm not cultured enough. I don't care if I'm not the right kind of woman for whatever you think a woman should be. I don't care if I don't have the right job. I don't care if I don't raise my kids the way you want me to, because the life I have now is the one I have built because of my own damn work. So everybody else who knows nothing about it can honestly suck it. I just don't care. And I know it doesn't make me a good person to constantly be like, I don't care. I don't care. It's not, it's just, yes, I have a small circle in my life now because I can't afford to care. I have given decades of my life worrying about making other people happy to my own detriment. And I am now choosing myself and whatever that might look like. And that's just what it's going to be. And I'm ultimately, like, when I look at my life, I'm happy with it. I have amazing friends and family and a partner and jobs that I enjoy and doing things with my time that I enjoy. And it's enough. It's not perfect. I think when I really think about it, if you really want to get that deep, when I think about not passing it on to my kids, I think it will make me feel much more confident in that, in the sense that, like, somebody once was like, trauma is not your fault, but healing is your responsibility. And so it's like, I'm doing the work so that my kids do get to be happy, healthy, well-adjusted human beings. And at the end of the day, if I have kids, so in my head, I redefined failure as like raising a kid like me who wants nothing to do with her own family. Like, ultimately in my head, I'm like, you're a failure. Doesn't matter how much money you make. It doesn't matter how many times you put food on the table. You're a failure because you left your kids feeling unsafe and not wanting to talk to you. And if I can have kids and raise them to still talk to me as adults and that they are good people, I'm a success. And that is not what a lot of brown kids are raised to think or believe success is. But I have made that my definition. And so it has led me to be okay with doing the work, but also just like enjoying the journey in terms of like, things were so much worse when I was a kid. And now they're so much better. And even if they're not perfect, I have the power to make it better. And I can, and quite frankly, will do whatever it takes to keep it better, even if it means other people will paint me as the bad guy. Because here's the thing, brown girls, you're always going to get painted as a bad guy. Because we talked about this in the brown girl guilt episode. There are a lot of people that benefit from you being a quiet, submissive, do what you're told kind of person. And when you stop being that person, you're going to make a lot of people mad. And the sooner you stop caring, the faster you will get back on track to healing yourself, living your life, and as I like to remind you all, grabbing life by the balls, as you should. That's all I have to say. Thanks for tuning in, guys. Thanks so much for tuning in, guys. Make sure if you enjoyed this episode, you leave us a review on iTunes. You can find the show on all major streaming platforms. You can find me on Instagram at Deesha.Mazeppa. You can shop my Etsy shop, Deesha Mazeppa Designs. Find out everything you want to know about this show at DeeshaMazeppa.com. And if you or someone you know would like to be a guest, you can email bwwpspodcast@gmail.com. And I'll see you guys next time. Bye. This podcast is hosted and produced by Deesha Mystery Mazeppa. Music for the show was created by Crexwell.